It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS! Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent Island, you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9, 8 central. On CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Welcome into the Illini Inquirer podcast. It's Jeremy Warner, and there's a lot to talk about in college basketball. We figured let's bring in our guy, Isaac Trotter. Isaac, we're going to break down a dream class, potentially. You're going to break down some transfer targets for Illinois basketball. But we got to talk about the national championship game. We got to talk about the Kentucky job opening. But first of all, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. Yeah, it's been a long month, a long couple months here, but there's no off season in college basketball. And, you know, that's the best part of the time of the year, right? When you have just an insane tournament and then you hit the portal and what do we got? 1,500 names. So my job is super busy, but it's great.
You can follow Isaac Trotter, 24/7 Sports college basketball writer, Illini Inquirer alum. We are so proud of what he's doing and all the work he's doing. He's one of my favorite guys to read, and that's not just because I have bias here. But UConn, man, like Illinois fans should probably feel better today, right? About, you know, losing to UConn, 30-0 run, it still stings. But this is just a machine. I've never seen anything like this. So to take care of Purdue like they did last night on the national stage, the two top teams, and for them to dominate, what's your big UConn takeaway?
I feel like they're just like the perfect mix of role allocation and talent and how to build a roster, maybe a little bit mid-major transfer like Tristan Newton, maybe a little high major transfer like Cam Spencer, maybe a little big time recruiting, getting top 50 guys in, maybe a top five star in Steph Castle. It's like, it's just like this perfect mix that's all come together. And I think they're a really good blueprint to try to follow. It's easier said than done of just like trying to build teams that are just so well-rounded, just elite in transition offense, elite rebounding team. Can you defend the rim? Can you have those big guards? It's like they just had a lot of answers to the test and no one could touch them. And like we talked about on our Selection Sunday show with you, like the moment that bracket came out, it's like, you don't want to be in UConn's region, but man, this is a tough draw for UConn. And they just made it look way, way, way too easy.
Yeah, like, you know, it's probably the price Illinois pays for having a nice draw until the Elite Eight. So you can look at that. Hey, we took our medicine there. But the defense of that team, of what I saw the last couple weeks, was just what stood out to me most. I know there were four entering last night. I don't know if they ended higher, top three in the country probably after that. But top three offense, top three defense, I believe. But last night, and this is, I like Braden Smith, I like Fletcher Lawyer, it felt like watching pros against the Indiana High School All-Stars last night. I knew that was an advantage, but what Steph Castle was able to do throughout this term, like that defense was suffocating. And then if you got by them, oh, you had to deal with Donovan Kling. I was just so impressed by them.
They have like just waves of awesome defenders. Like Castle at the point of attack is just nasty, and then Klingon at the back of the line is just like insane. It's like you could make a case that maybe Castle's one of the best perimeter defenders in the sport, and Klingon is probably the best rim protector in the sport, and they're both on the same team. So I just feel like the fact that like what they did defensively in this tournament is absurd. You know, Purdue just destroyed them, had one of their worst games. Illinois just destroyed them, had one of their worst games. You know, San Diego State was a solid offense, honestly, this year and just couldn't get anything going. Alabama needed a miracle to have all of those threes to go in the first half just to be within striking distance. So what they've done defensively, again, like we say, oh, just build a team like UConn. Well, good luck, right? Like, good luck finding a Steph Castle and Donovan Klingon, but it must be nice to have some of those guys.
Yeah, it does, but Denny Hurley deployed them really well. I mean, going one-on-one with Zach Edey. Edey had 37 points. Probably should have been the most outstanding player of the tournament, to be honest with you, Zach Edey, because it was a UConn team that won. I don't know how you picked one of those guys to win that award, but Tristan Newton, obviously the bucket getter for them. But Danny Hurley built the roster, deployed them well, and then just there's a mindset, man. So I understand why people don't like his antics on the sideline, but what makes Danny Hurley so good, Isaac?
He's just a spaz in the best way, I think. You know, he's just and the other thing I like about it too is just their game planning was elite. I felt like they nailed the scouting report against Illinois. They nailed the scouting report against Purdue. They nailed the scouting report against Alabama for long stretches too, especially in that second half where they really honed down and took away those threes. So it's just a perfect conglomeration of like, hey, like Danny Hurley is a perfectionist and wants to nail everything when it comes to the recruiting and the portal and the high school recruiting and, you know, player development. But their game planning on before games was, I think, just like fantastic. I don't think you could look at any of, you know, UConn's games here and been like, yeah, they really didn't go in with a great plan there. Like, it felt like they were always ahead of the curve. And that gives me like hope for them moving forward, because you look at this roster, it's like he's got to rebuild in a big way. Like, they could lose all five starters, they could lose their sixth man. Like, this is going to look very different when you got that guy on the sideline. And if he can stay away from this Kentucky opening, I think it's going to be a situation where UConn's probably in the mix for everything, even if they have like five, six, seven transfers.
We will get to the Illini transfers. People are like, why is this a UConn podcast? Well, they're really good. And I want to get to the Kentucky opening because it could impact Illinois. But outside of UConn, what was the story of this NCAA tournament?
A little boring, right? A lot of blowouts, I would say, in certain spots. The thing that I kept going back to is we get so anchored to got to have a top 20 offense, got to have a top 20 defense. God, I mean, you can't make a run without those things. That didn't really play in this tournament. We saw a lot of those teams that like that were maybe like quote unquote like pretenders or fake teams like go on deep runs. Like Illinois goes on a deep run with a defense that didn't necessarily meet those benchmarks. Alabama makes the Final Four at the deep run that doesn't necessarily meet those benchmarks. Obviously NC State was just an insane story. So that's one of those things in this tournament where it's like we don't need to necessarily have like these like, you know, these preseason biases of like what you need to be on this end and what you need to be on that end to make a run, because it really just comes down to how you're playing at that moment. And that's what I felt like this tournament really showcased. It's like you can go in with all this historical data and sometimes it just doesn't even matter.
I think the one takeaway I would have is get old, stay old, right? I think the transfer portal is the way to live right now. I mean, yes, you want to develop those guys. If you get them to a junior, senior year, I think that's great, but it's the old teams, man.
That's true. Yeah, four of the top 70 teams in the experience rating on KenPom made the Final Four. I think that was interesting too. I think it also gives credence to being able to build a Final Four team in a lot of different ways, right? Alabama has a bunch of mid-major transfers. Purdue has all retention, basically. Yeah. Like one top 100 recruit, one transfer, and the rest is just homegrown talent. UConn, kind of that little bit of a mix of everything. So it's just like NC State, all transfers. The entire top seven rotation is all transfers. So it's like there's not some one-size-fits-all way to build a team that can win it all. Like, there's just – it's really cool, I think, when you can see all these different styles of roster building kind of have some March success. That's cool to me because I think you can do things your way and be successful.
What did you think of Illinois' run to the Elite Eight?
Well, I was happy I nailed it, right? Like, I was like, all right, Elite Eight. And then, like, I felt like I got that one right there. Not many things went right in my bracket. I had Duke to the Final Four, and, of course, they fumbled in the Elite Eight. But for the most part, I felt like Illinois did what they needed to do. And when you look at that Iowa State game, I felt like if Illinois had lost that game, there'd have been a feeling of, like, incompleteness with this team. It's like, man, you kind of left one out there. And so I think getting that win and making it to the Elite Eight really felt like, okay, like we hit our expectations for this team, like one of the better teams in college basketball makes the Elite Eight, and it didn't go the way you wanted. And I still can't believe that it was 53-23 after it was 23-23, because I felt like they had a chance to win the game in the second half, but it is what it is. And you felt like this team kind of met its potential, like they met their upside. And I feel like, you know, it's a really, really good year. It's going to go down as one of the best seasons of Illinois basketball, and now you got to build off it.
All right, so you get this crazy carousel, and it's amazing that it starts with SMU, right? Like, and it leads to John Calipari going to Arkansas. Listen, I think there's a great parachute for John Calipari for Arkansas. I get it. You get one of the greatest, most successful coaches of all time. I know, you know, championships, he's not as high, but he's won a championship. He's been to so many Final Fours. He's going to get recruits. And I've always thought that Arkansas job is awesome. Look what Musk was able to do there. The support is insane. The money is insane there. So for Arkansas, I get it. But now it opens up arguably the top job in college basketball, along with Kansas and North Carolina, I would say. And of course, Illinois fans fret every time one of these jobs opens. But what do you make of that Kentucky opening? You're tied in here, Isaac. Where do you think they're going?
Yeah, so this is one of the best jobs in college basketball because of, think about the money that you can have to put together a roster. We talk about the salary cap. Kentucky spent over $7 million putting their team together last year. Like, that was a $7 million roster. It didn't work, obviously. They reached what their potential is. But now as you head into this next coaching carousel, it's like, okay, like, we have don't have to pay a $33 million buyout to John Calipari. So we have – the bank has been kind of cleared here a little bit, and the checkbooks are ready to roll. So part of me wonders if Kentucky could be better now without John Calipari, because you have a chance to go out and get one of the best coaches in college basketball. You know, Nate Oates says he's staying. We'll see. I think that's probably – I'll take him at his word for it right now, but we'll see how that goes. Scott Drew feels like the top target on the board, and that is if Dan Hurley isn't the choice. And Hurley talked yesterday, oh, I'm staying. I'm not hitting the portal. Oh, I could have a divorce if my wife – like to move to Kentucky. But he hasn't seen that 8-year, $80 million offer yet. And that's a very, very big outlier here too. So that's going to change – that could change some math there for Dan Hurley if that is truly the offer that could be on the table. So it's an awesome job. There's huge ripple effects. I think Kentucky could be really, really good next year because they have the resources. And if you have a coach that really – you know, I think they need to prioritize a coach that's a head coach right now that can bring talent with him. That's why I think, like, Scott Drew would make sense, because it's not just Scott Drew. It's Scott Drew and a top 10 recruiting class. It's not just Nate Oates. It's Nate Oates, Mark Sears, Grant Nelson, and a top 10 recruiting class. It's not just Dan Hurley. It's Dan Hurley, a young improving core, and another top recruiting class. So it's like – that's where I feel like that's the separator, where you're trying to find, like, and we've seen in recent history, like Rick Pitino, he takes the job at St. John's, is able to get Iona's star, Danis Jenkins. You know, we've seen Great Osabor followed his coach from Montana State to Utah State and was the Mountain West Player of the Year. So this isn't new, but that's what I feel like the blueprint has to be for this job. You can't, I just don't think Billy Donovan makes a ton of sense. I would much rather have the coach that's already bringing me dudes that can have a little bit of continuity so I can win really, really big.
Yeah, the Billy Donovan thing doesn't make sense to me for a few reasons. One, does Billy want to recruit? And does Kentucky want somebody who doesn't maybe want to recruit, right? Like, if I'm Billy, I'm like, in the NBA, I don't think the Bulls are rushing him out. He signed an extension last year. He's got 2 years, I believe, left on his deal. And I think you'd have to pay him a ton of money. Well, Dan Hurley, he's making $5 million now. That'll be doubled by UConn. So he'll at least get a raise out of this. You got to call him. I think he'll probably stay at UConn. So I'm just going down this list. And then Scott Drew, to me, he can't say no to Kentucky. I just can't see. I mean, he's done everything he can at Baylor. He's won a title, built a new arena there. Given where that program was 20 years ago, like, I just don't know if he can accomplish any more there or say no to Kentucky with maybe 10, 15 years left in his coaching career. Then what do we do? I mean, Nate Oates, an $18 million buyout, I know, but, like, if people want to mention Brad Underwood, Brad Underwood's got a $10-plus million buyout. So I think Oates would be more likely there. I just don't see this going past candidate 3 or 4 for them, right?
Agreed, right. And that the fourth candidate, I would say, behind that big three of, like, Scott Drew and Dan Hurley and Nate Oates, I think is not Brad Underwood. I think it's Sean Miller, who I think is a rock star and would kill it there, especially with his ability. I mean, Bagman drops bags, right? Like, he's going to go into the portal and be able to get dudes. And we've seen him build a program like Arizona into a routinely, you know, they made the second weekend, like, 7 of 8 of the last 16 tournaments that have been played, Sean Miller's made the second weekend. Like, that's absurd. So I think he would be another name there that could potentially pop if it goes past him. But Scott Drew just makes way, way, way too much sense. He's so close with the athletic director. They have a really close relationship. That feels like the job that he would leave for. And I just feel like this Kentucky opening, it's not going to be open for very long, because it feels like those top guys are not going to be able to pass up this type of opportunity with this type of money, with the type of roster that you can put together, even though you're kind of behind the eight ball with all the other, you know, coaching carousel filled.
I think Brad Underwood has done an unbelievable job here. Like, he is on pace, Isaac, to be, I've said this many times, like, he could be Lou Henson, right, at this place, and potentially even, you know, have more success, potentially. But it wouldn't make any sense for Kentucky for me. Like, right? So, like, what would you say to Illini fans that are fretting about Brad Underwood being involved here? He should be on the list somewhere. Again, I just don't know if it gets to that level for him.
Yeah, I just – doesn't make sense to me either. You know, I think if Kentucky came calling for Brad Underwood, I think we'd be foolish to say he wouldn't listen. Like, no, obviously, like
he'd probably take it, right? Like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's Kentucky basketball, and it's different. But it feels like they are heading in a different direction. I would just be very surprised. You know, we were putting together our list of the top eight coaches, and we were going to make it like 10 or 11. And we talked to multiple people, and multiple people basically told us to take Brad Underwood off the list. So, like, we did. And so, like, that's kind of where we're at behind the scenes. And I just don't feel like that's going to be the case there. And you have a really good thing building, and I know there's a lot of consternation of, like, well, this roster's changing, like, you're building a brand new team, Terrence is leaving, Coleman is leaving, Marcus is probably leaving, like, oh, well, Brad's neck. I think there's more to it than just that. And I think the Josh Whitman factor here is a really big deal too. When you have an AD like that, who are you really tied in with and who's kind of gone to war for you in multiple different aspects, that really matters. And I think that Brad Underwood would be foolish to run away from Josh Whitman, just like Nate Oates has been hesitant to run away from Alabama's athletic director, who's also revered as one of the top of the game right now.
Yeah, so like Kentucky, Kansas, North Carolina, like those would be different, right? So if Kentucky called, I would definitely be nervous. I was an old fan. But like Louisville has been brought up. You know, Texas, I get it's Austin. It's different. But like a lateral move like that doesn't make any sense to me when you have a top 10 salary with an AD who's going to keep paying you even more and more the more success you have. You just got a one-year extension because you made the Sweet 16 and a raise because you made the Sweet 16 here. And that AD that puts that money into the facility that is now one of the best facilities in the country, and you just know he's going to give you everything that you need. You're aligned. Like that, there's so much value in that, Isaac.
And being a basketball school, I think that really, really matters here. And
there's legacy here, right? Like there's legacy here.
Yeah. This is a really, really good job. Illinois is a very, very good job. And if Brad Underwood somehow left, Illinois would have a pick of a litter between some really, really darn good basketball coaches who would be all over the job. So that's not the thing here. And then now you think about just like where Brad Underwood is as like, you know, his status among Illinois fans. I feel like just making the second weekend and making the Elite Eight has just changed the math there big time. It feels like the last thing that he needed to check off his box before everyone like kind of dove in. I'm like, yeah, we're like Brad Underwood is the right man for this job. And so I feel like getting that monkey off his back kind of changes things, even if he's had, you know, some of the most success in the Big Ten compared to his peers.
There's no yeah, but anymore, right? Like he got that off the list with all the Big Ten success and all the transfer portal success. This episode of the Illini Inquirer podcast is brought to you by BetterHelp. What's the first thing you do if you had an extra hour of your day? Go for a run, take a nap, read a book, show up for a friend? A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Illini today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Illini.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Here's where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back. About to set it up. New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Speaking of the transfer portal, Isaac, here we go. We're going to have you break down some targets, what you think Illinois needs here, but just give me a temperature of what you think of the talent in the transfer portal and what this is becoming in April and May here.
Boy, it's going to be fun, right? I think that there's been some very interesting hesitancy from guys to commit early in this portal cycle. We've seen very few commits. I think we're at like 41 commits, and there's almost 1,500 players in the portal last I checked. So guys are slowing down this process. I think it's financial related a little bit too, of trying to drive that price up a little bit. We've seen some great players enter the portal, but there's also some positions of need that Illinois certainly needs, like a stretch big. There aren't many guys out there that are stretch bigs in the portal. So that is going to make the bidding war go up for those different types of players. But there's great players in the portal like usual. And, I remember talking to Eric Musselman a couple years ago of like, hey, they brought in a bunch of McDonald's All-Americans, that Anthony Black, Nick Smith team that Illinois lost in the tournament, because they didn't think that portal cycle was very good. Well, last year's portal cycle was really good, so Arkansas was really active in it. And this year, I think the portal cycle is just as good, if not better, in certain spots. So there's some big time names in here, and I think if your team needing to rebuild your roster in the portal, this is a good cycle to do it.
Yeah, it was funny you talked about the financial. Like, we have to think about this. Like, and these teams got to think like NBA teams almost, like salary cap. Like, maybe some teams like a Kentucky can go in there and be like, yeah, we'll spend whatever it is, kind of like the Dodgers or something like that. But maybe it's more like baseball in that way. But you gotta think of like, okay, who do I want is my tier A guys? Like, who am I willing to commit this NIL to? How do you think Illinois is set up that way? Isaac, just their sell and everything.
The sell is terrific. You know, if you compare like just the history, it's Alfonso Plummer, it's Matthew Meyer. Both of those guys are all Big Ten guys. Both of those guys had the biggest roles of their careers at Illinois. Terrence Shannon's obviously an unbelievable sell with what he's done. I mean, again, we were talking about Terrence Shannon as a role player who transformed into a lead guard, superstar, All-American, second-team All-American, first-team All-Big Ten type of guy. Marcus Damask, I think, is bang for buck. As good of a portal get that you could find in the cycle last year. So I think that also kind of garners you some like credence, I think, with like fans and like with media. It's like, for me personally, when I look at the portal, I'm like, okay, who did Michael Shrewsbury go after? I think you're probably a good player.
Yeah.
And so like now when I go, hey, who's Illinois looking at in the portal? I think they're probably a pretty darn good player. So like, that's like the things that I start thinking about too. I use that same thing in basketball too, like during games, like who did Micah Shrewsbury go after defensively? Yeah, he probably stinks. That's how I use it in the portal as well. So just because I feel like if you have this proof of concept here and you know what you're looking for, that'll make it interesting. And I think it's fascinating too, because there's just so many names and coaches are overwhelmed. There's not enough time in the day to hit all of these guys. And so I think those guys with like elite measurables and the elite analytics are going to be really near the top of the key, like top of the list there. And then there's going to be others that had maybe rough years analytically that could slip underneath the cracks a little bit and be more values in it, because there's just so many names and coaches do not have time to find them.
All right, Isaac. So I just sent you the message. I said, I want you to come on the podcast and give me a dream, maybe realistic kind of class of what Illinois could put together. So how do you want to go about this? Do you want to start with like A-tier targets? Do you just want to give a class? Like, how do you want to go about this?
Here's what I got. So I did my homework for this one. So I basically went like position by position, and I did like, this is the top priority of, this is the guy that if I could get him, you feel really good about it.
All right.
And so I went position by position, and I have like a target for each spot.
Okay. So guard, wing, stretch big, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's go lead guard, because I think they're actually going to be in the market for a lead guard. I don't think, you know, Marcus Damask will try for a waiver. We'll see what happens of that. But they want somebody who can run in ball screens more this year to be a little bit different than they were last year. They love booty ball as well. But lead guard, go. Who's your A-tier target?
Javon Small out of Oklahoma State. This was a guy that I fell in love with really early. I watched him go off against Creighton in non-conference play, and I was like, ooh, I kind of like that. And then it's December 20th, and it's the middle of the day, and I'm watching him play Wofford because I really liked watching this kid. And now he hits the portal, and now he's one of the top targets. And he was one of those guys that was like potentially going to enter the portal, and then he didn't for a little bit, and he tweeted, oh, I'm not in the portal, and I missed that. And so I thought he was in the portal, and we just hadn't ranked him because like Travis Branham, who does our transfer thing, didn't like him. And I'm like, I went to Travis, I'm like, what is going, like, what am I missing here? Like, I love this kid. And he's like, no, we were not in the portal. I'm like, okay, crisis averted. So then he hits the portal, and now he's a top 10 transfer, one of the best transfers in the class. And I love him. I think he's phenomenal. Here's the couple stats that I went up and looked. 47% on catch and shoot threes, 37% from three-point range. East Carolina transfer, Tristan Newton, came out of that program, pretty darn good player. Turnovers were an issue last year after Bryce Thompson's season-ending injury, but I think that he just flashes so much off the bounce, creates a ton of separation, one of the best pick-and-roll scorers in college basketball, top 100 in that category, just alone personally. 48% on non-rim twos, so you got to make tough shots off the bounce, and he was able to do that. The floaters, the runners, the step backs. Again, like, I'm just looking for guys that Illinois's offense was honestly pretty simple. It was, can you draw two to the basketball? Javon Small can do that, yeah. And his ability off of pick and rolls was really, really good. So I'm a huge fan of him. I think he's honestly, I still think he's a little bit undervalued in this class, because I would put him pound for pound as one of the best lead guards in this cycle.
I watched him the other day. Quick, explosive, gets the rim, needs to finish around the rim a little bit better. But you said the mid-range game, he's really good. He's like 52% from the mid-range on two-point jumpers. He can create for himself. He can create for teammates. As you said, a little turnover prone. But that's a lead guard. That's a proven high-major league guard. So I can understand why you'd have him as the top target. Who's on your next tier for guards?
Yeah, so if I missed out on him, I would be going full steam ahead on Javian McCollum out of Oklahoma. That's a guy who is another one of the top transfers last year that entered the portal again this year. I don't know if he is gettable, though. Georgia Tech has done a really good job prioritizing him. Damon Stoudemire has a great sell, but McCollum is filthy off the bounce. Just, again, just electric pick-and-roll score, dynamic off the bounce, could really hit step-back threes, makes tough shots, catch-and-shoot threes, runners, gets to the rim, really creative with his finishes, can finish with his right and with his left. He's a little small. He's like 6'2", like 165-ish, so that's created some issues defensively. But for the most part, he was really, really solid for an Oklahoma team that he had to do a lot for them. He carried a huge load, and he was terrific. So he would be like my one – he's not a second-tier option. He's like a 1A, 1B. And but you're probably – he's probably not the most gettable. Here's the late round one, too, from the lead guards that I really like that's kind of a sleeper, is Missouri State's Alston Mason. I think he's got a lot of game, a lot of game. And so he's outside the top 100. Oh, breaking news. Arizona guard Kylan Boswell just entered the transfer portal.
I was about to say, we need to interrupt here. Kylan Boswell, Champaign native. I don't know if you ever saw him play in high school or anything like that, Isaac. But
Urbana Middle School, baby.
Obviously, he's going to be connected to Illinois. He didn't have the best 2 years there. What I want to remind people, he's still 18. Like, he turns 19 later this month, averaged almost 10 points a game, shot with 30-something, high 30s from three, I believe. What would you make of Kylan Boswell with Illinois?
Massive, massive frame. Just a huge, strong, physical guard.
Could do booty ball, right? Could he do booty ball?
Yes, he could. I think he. I think him and the squat rack get along really, really well. Anyway, he is streaky. Like, he was streaky, and there were some times, and I have some clips saved of just like some of the not the best body language, mm-hmm. where it just wasn't necessarily going the best at Arizona. But he kind of turned into the whipping post for all of Arizona's problems, which is pretty unfair for, again, a young freshman, you know, sophomore that really should have been a freshman because he's a reclass guy. So he's a really, really talented scorer. He has some moxie to him. There were some moments where on the road, I think I can remember the one on the road against Oregon, where that was a big game. Oregon's playing well, and Boswell just came out and was a killer, hit some big-time shots. He's got great range. We've seen him make plays off the bounce, too. So he's like one of those, like, I feel like this Illinois transfer cycle, you have to kind of swing big this year because you just don't have a lot of proven pieces. Boswell is a swing big target who you could be a big hit. It could be a bigger miss too, right? So there's a little bit of risk reward there, but you're kind of banking on the former, what he was as a prospect. You know, if you talk to Travis Branham, like, get Travis Branham on the phone to have him talk about Kylan Boswell. He loves that dude. One of his favorite guards in the cycle. And I think he's going to be, you know, a big time target for Illinois.
What do you think if he were able to live up to his ceiling? Like, what does he look like if he is living up to his talent?
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the best guards in the Big Ten. If you get him to Illinois and he's like one of the best, if he hits his ceiling, like, he is one of the best guards in the Big Ten. He's big, he's strong, he's physical. I think he's got some defensive upside to him too as well, just not being able to get screened. Multi-positional defender as well. Just with his size, you could see him shifting onto those big wings and kind of getting underneath them and making them uncomfortable. He can really operate in ball screens at a high level too. And just with that size, you think of him as like, yeah, he should shoot over 60% at the rim, which is not easy to do for some of these point guards in high major basketball. So he just checks off a lot of boxes from every aspect of it. And his best was really good this year. And there's a reason why he was starting for an Arizona team that had Jaden Bradley, who was a stud coming off the bench, who had KJ Lewis, who was a stud coming off the bench, who had Pella Larson, who was going to play more, who had Caleb Love in there. Like, there's a reason why Kylan Boswell was in there. Like, he earned that job. He was not given that job. Jaden Bradley gave him a real run, yeah. And Boswell still stayed, you know, near the top of that pecking order.
All right, you got any other guards you want to unload on us?
Let's go to shooters here. Dante Maddox out of Toledo, I think, is a clear top target, top tier target. Illinois, I think, is going to get him on campus for a visit, yeah. Right? So 40% on threes, 86% from the line. We talk about his off-movement shooting. That's going to be the main thing with him. He has great gravity, but I think he's got underrated ability off the bounce as well. He's big and strong. Like, yeah, I think he's only like 6'2", but he rises off the floor and really gets a really good separation there. So he's one of those guys where I feel like he just put him with any transfer portal class and I'm going to like the class, mm-hmm. because he just kind of brings it together. He can play a lot of different styles with a lot of different teams. So if you're like Illinois, who you need multiple shooters, I think Maddox has to be the top of the list. And then the other one, who I think is right there with Maddox too, just entered the portal today, is Ryan Conwell out of Indiana State. He is a stud. Indianapolis kid, 16 points a game this year for a very, very good Indiana State team. Now, everyone has expected, oh, all that team is going to transfer to St. Louis to join Josh Schertz there. Conwell is the exception there. He is very, very highly regarded in the portal. He shot 40% on 260 attempts from three, a killer in transition threes. He's a no-doubt plug-and-play high major starter. We've seen him make some plays off the bounce as well, too. So he is not just a shooter, but lefty, clean rhythm, just like it's exactly what you want a shooter to look like. And he is right up there. So if you're Brad Underwood, you get Dante Maddox or Ryan Conwell, you feel pretty, pretty good about like filling that shooting void that you have on this roster.
One more guard I want to ask you, because he's out of Rockford, is Marcus Hill. Out of Bowling Green. If you had a chance to look at him, he attacks the rim, man. He's just not a very efficient three-point shooter.
Yeah, he's one of those guys where I think it's like the numbers don't necessarily look as good, but you can kind of see the vision if you brought him in. Again, bringing two to the ball, he can do that. Hill can bring two to the ball because he's beaten his defender off the bounce. A lot of rim pressure. You'd expect him to get to the free throw line a lot. You could see him kind of operating as like their pseudo point guard, even if his assist rate wasn't very, very high. Maybe he is that secondary guy, but I mean, what is a point guard for Brad Underwood anymore? That's right. I feel like it's just like, hey, are you better than your defender and you can beat him off the bounce? Here you go. Here's the ball. So like, that's, I think I have some concerns with him of like, could you play him with a Ty Rogers? Could you play him with a Merez Johnson? Could you play him with a Monty Hansberry? Like three of those guys on the floor at the same time could be a little bit iffy, but I think he's a really good piece if he's like, you know, the worst shooting guard in your backcourt and you have two other plus snipers around him.
Yeah, if he's taking like the Justin Harmon role, sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll take that guy. This other team's probably going to give him a starting job. All right, are we ready to move to the wing?
Let's go to wings. There's a lot of great wings in this cycle, but I think the two that stand atop the board here is AJ Storr and Otega Owe. And so I think with Storr, what you're looking at is I have got to do a better job of understanding that young players will get better. And I sometimes just like watch the film with AJ and you watch the games and you're like, man, the flashes are so tantalizing. And then there's so many options, opportunities there on the floor where he just kind of leaves you wanting a little bit more. And so I'm not fully in on him as like the best player in this class, but I think if you're looking at him in this portal cycle where you need to take big swings again, and if you can get AJ Storr on your team, I think you do it, because there's some untapped potential there with his game. I remember even early in the season when I was watching him play against Tennessee, like not scared of the moment, really big, really strong against older, really good perimeter defenders, and he was just torching them. And I think you see little pockets there where you could see him as a post-up guy. You could see him doing some of the booty ball stuff that Marcus Damask did, where he can get in the middle of the lane and fall away jumpers. Like, he's so big and so active and so long, it's like really hard to block that shot. So the shot selection, the attention to detail defensively, the attention to detail offensively, like there's some questions, there's some holes in his profile. He's, I mean, he is one of the most talented players in the portal, and he produces, man.
Yeah, so, like, everyone's going to compare him to Terrence Shannon because it's a similar role, right? And I think it obviously shows a runway of what he could do at Illinois. He's further along in his complete game than Terrence. Like, Terrence was just a knockdown shooter, like a 3-and-D guy, right? Like, A.J. Storr's got some creativity to his game that Terrence didn't have at that point. But he plays like he's still an underclassman, right? The decision-making stuff is just not there. And I wonder what he'd be like away from Wisconsin, where he's allowed some freedom of some of that stuff. But he certainly has some flaws, but the talent is just tantalizing. You sit there and watch him go up against Purdue and Illinois in that Big Ten tournament, and I was just like, that guy's going to make a lot of money if he enters the transfer portal, guys.
And he is fearless, too. Yes. Some of the drives against Edie are just – I mean, they just stick in your head because it's like he is not scared of anybody. Like, he's going to the rim thinking that he could dunk on you. And the transition stuff, you just feel like he is not that far away from being a really, really special player if everything went the right way. And so that's like the – now we talk about the salary cap. It's like, how much are we using of our salary cap here for A.J. Storr? What does that mean that we can't add – around him? Like, he needs to be, he can be the piece on a very, very good team, right? I strongly believe that, but the supporting cast also has to be able to pick him up on the nights when it's just not going very well. And Wisconsin had that. Illinois would have to build out the roster in order to feel better about that.
I will say Storr and Boswell would be a complete roll of the dice, man. Like, that, the upside would be so tantalizing, but the downside is like, oh, this could not go well. And I wonder what Underwood's appetite would be like for that. I know you're a big fan of Otega Owe. I am too. His shot making to me is the most important thing. Just doesn't shoot a lot of threes. And on a team with Ty Rogers, Merez Johnson, I could get concerned about that. But I love his game. So why would you love him for Illinois? And break down for the Illini fans what he brings.
A monster in transition. Just big, strong, physical. His brother's in the NFL, right? Big time defensive end, edge rusher. Like, he has the body to be an absolute freak show. And so defensively, I thought you saw that a lot for Oklahoma this past season. He was one of their better perimeter defenders. And playing for Porter Moser is hard. And Owe was like one of the most improved players. He spent just hours and hours in the gym trying to get better this offseason. And that's like the word with him, is that he's a pretty tireless worker that's going to get a lot better. So that jumper, you know, he only made 7 threes in Big 12 play. But I'm not just holding him to that. Like, I think that there's more untapped upside there. He shot 37% from three for the season, but most of it was like, hey, you're wide open, guys aren't guarding you, you just have to take that shot. But the rim pressure is real. Shooting 65% on the rim at high volume is definitely speaks to me, like, kind of moves me a little bit. Like, I love that part about him. And then you just look at the defensive impact too. Like, you like what Steph Castle does defensively. I think you could see Owe kind of transforming into that type of, yeah, you're 6'5", you're big, you're physical, you're just going to punk dudes, and we can throw you on a point guard like they did with Terrence Shannon. We can throw you on a wing. You get switched onto a four, like, you're fine because you're so strong. And I just feel like you can find a lot of ways to win with him. Like Owe is not hurting you. Like, yes, maybe the spacing isn't necessarily the right way, but, like, yes, if you give him space, he will. That's, you're giving him two steps of a runway to get downhill where he can posterize you, which is, or get to the free throw line. So those are the parts about him. Like, I think you can game plan around some of his shooting flaws if you get a Maddox, if you get a Javon Small, yes, to kind of cover up some of those issues from the perimeter perspective.
Yeah, I'd love to add him. You gotta make sure you get those shooters like you're talking about.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Any other wings you want to bring up?
Those were the main two that I had right now, kind of on my list, I guess.
No, because they got to be they got to be shopping for stars on the wing, right? And so it's got to be that caliber kind of player.
Yeah, like I looked at Adduth Yero, who's like another one of the top wings in the portal. I don't know if I quite see that there with him. Like he's got some game, especially with as like a really, really good defender, a really good driver. But I think he's more closer to a four than a three. I would love him as a four surrounded by a ton of shooting. Like Kentucky should have never let him walk out the door. So that's just as a piece there. But I just don't know if he's necessarily a fit. And we'll see, you know, what his market matriculized to be. Let's move to the stretch bigs, because like I said earlier, there's not many of them in the portal. That's why I think Kerry Booth is fascinating to me. So if you kind of look at what he's done out of Notre Dame, the three-point percentage just doesn't necessarily speak out to you. He's under 30% from three, but the attempts are really interesting to me. If you look at some of the freshmen in college basketball this past season, he was the only guy over 6'10" in the top 20 of three-point like attempts per 100 possessions. And so it comes off smooth off his hand. Like he is absolutely a guy who could play in the NBA one day. I think that there's some real upside there off the bounce too, attacking long closeouts and being able to get downhill and knock down or, you know, dunk on to people. See Coleman Hawkins, like mm-hmm. what we saw this year of like the lane just parts ways and there goes Kerry Booth down the floor for a tomahawk jam. He's got some nice game to him. And there's some defensive numbers there too as well. So I guess it's a little bit of a red flag that you would knowingly leave Micah Shrewsbury, but it is a situation where he's really, really talented and you can see the vision with him. And in a portal where there's not a lot of those stretch bigs and you're looking for that Coleman Hawkins replacement, I think you could do a whole lot worse than Kerry Booth.
Yeah, looking for a Quincy Guerrier replacement too, right? Like they need multiple guys in that front court. So if he's sitting next to Merez Johnson or Imani Hansberry, I think he can do that because he can provide a little rim protection. You see the flashes, right? So you're not – can you count on Quincy Guerrier numbers next year? I don't know, Isaac. I think he could do that. But long term, man, like there's a lot of excitement about him. The son of Calvin Booth – who's a former NBA player, I believe first-round pick, now is the GM of the Denver Nuggets. Illinois has connections to Calvin Booth, by the way, and their staff. So Kerry is expected to visit Illinois this weekend. He makes a lot of sense, because not only for the short term, but the long term, Isaac.
And just, again, like I think that people are going to pigeon-toe him as like just a shooting big. The off the bounce, like him as a dribbler, like you see the fluidity with his moves off the bounce and it's like, oh yeah, like that looks a little different.
That looks like NBA stuff, right? Like in the NBA, that's what these forwards do. So like even though Coleman still has to prove himself as an NBA prospect, like he does things that NBA stretch bigs do, and you can see it from Kerry too.
And then you like defensively, I think it's like another, you know, rim protect. I don't think he's necessarily your best rim protector next year, but he's one of your top rim protectors, especially if he's a forward. And you see the fluidity on the defensive end as well, where it's like, again, another multi-positional defender who's can make plays off that. It's just, he checks off a lot of boxes. And I was thinking about Kerry Booth a lot lately. Quote.
Just sitting on your chair, just Kerry Booth, man.
Like, me and Mike LaTulip have talked about this a lot. Like the philosophy of like, four key pillars that he has with players of like basketball IQ, character, positional size, and the absence of skill deficiencies. Like that's what he looks like in the Nuggets. It's like, how many guys have that? And so like I'm thinking about his kid. It's like, okay, basketball IQ, I guess we'll find out together. Character, I guess we'll find out together, right? I don't know the guy yet, but positional size, yep. Absence of skill deficiencies, kind of start to see it there. So it's like, that's where you're trying to check off those boxes from an NBA perspective, and Illinois could start doing that with his kid first.
Illinois has been connected to a lot of other stretch bigs, so who else is high on your list?
Yeah, I was looking at Danny Wolf out of Yale. I'm a really big fan of him. You know, I think a lot of people look at him as like a stretch big, but I like his defense a lot. Very active in pick and rolls. Like you see him get his hands on passes, deflects balls at Yale. I think there's like some questions about him physically at the next level, but he has a great frame for it. He's from this area, like the Chicagolands area, so he's pretty comfortable around here. He trains here in the summer is what I was told.
Yeah, just to tell people, he's from Glencoe, which is between Highland Park and Evanston, so right on the lake there.
Yeah, absolutely. So he's pretty familiar with this area. Now, I was told that he really wants a high academic institution that he wanted to transfer to, and Illinois could check that box after he's transferring from Yale. So like that could make some sense there. But Michigan is a player. North Carolina is obviously a player. But you just look at Wolf's game, and it's pretty easy to see why he could fit into this really unproven front court as like, you know what you're going to get from him defensively. You see him as a passer. You know, I don't think he's an elite post-up scorer yet. at the high major ranks, but you see him able to work with two hands. And again, only he was just finished his sophomore year, so he's still really, really young. So that's the underrated part about him. He's not like some fifth year Ivy League transfer. He's only a sophomore.
Yeah, I got questions about can he handle athleticism defensively, right? And those things. But 7 foot, unbelievable catch and shoot guy. I think he's 95th percentile in that. Not the best post-up option, but he's got those skills. But you talk about IQ, passing, shooting. He reminds me, like, can he make a rink mass type of impact? I think absolutely.
Great call. Great call. And like, it's like the hubs, those yes. centers that are the hubs of your offense. Like, I think Wolf could absolutely be a part of that. Like, and that's where I feel like basketball is really changing. It's really easy to get really good looks offensively when you have like those skilled centers that can get you into different actions and you can run handoffs with. Like, the turnover rates on handoffs are way lower. That's why the handoff numbers have spiked lately. Josh Schertz has talked a lot about this throughout the process, throughout this entire cycle, as he's kind of blown up. And, you know, you're like kind of seeing what Robbie Avila does for him. It's like, could you envision Wolf doing that for some teams? Yeah, I think you could. And Rink Bass is another really, really great call. And he's got more game to him than, like, you know, a Ben Creakey, who at Iowa, who had some real limitations defensively. I like Wolf as a defensive prospect far, far more than Ben Creakey.
Yeah, and it's just a sophomore that barely played as a freshman. I kind of wrote this. I think he's a growth stock, too. Like, I think he's a guy that can get better and better and be an all-league caliber player as an upperclassman. Anybody else you want to hit on? Stretch big men?
Yeah, I got a couple others. One's a stretch, and one is not necessarily a stretch. Maxime Reynaud out of Stanford. Wow. Like, again, he was another one of my guys this year where I was watching a lot of Stanford because I went in looking at this Kanan Carlisle kid who I really like. Anyway, Reynaud was the one that just constantly, like, had my attention. Just super, super terrific skills in the mid-post area. You know, he can make some threes, but he is just like auto from like 10 feet and in with two different hands. Like, just a really polished offensive player. Like, he, you know, you get a little Dane Danger vibes with his ability to just have so many mix and match and opportunities that he can do. Just a very, very skilled offensive player. Again, another one of those bigs that I think you could play through. Some questions about him defensively. I don't think he's an elite drop coverage defender yet, and he'd have to work a lot to improve that part of his game, because I think that's probably the only pick and roll defense that he could really play well at a high level for Illinois. But he's a really good player who I think, you know, he's going to have a great big market. But if you get him, it's like plug and play 14 and 9, like just yeah. plug and play. And then the other one is Brandon Garrison at Oklahoma State. Young, again, this is a guy where I think it's like where you're trying to vary your portal cycle a little bit, where it's like you want to have some guys that can give you impact right away, but you also would like to have some people that, hey, maybe you get 2 years out of it. We don't know. Like, the portal is weird. You can enter and transfer as many times as you want mm-hmm. right now. But like, if you have an option to have a guy that could be around for a couple of years, Garrison would check off that box. And very physical, great prototype coming out of high school, had a lot of high major offers, was one of the top recruits in the country. Mike Boynton did a really good job with him in his first year. He put him on an island against really, really good defender or offensive players in the Big 12 and kind of held his own. I think he would instantly be one of the top defensive big men in the portal that I like. I think that there's a lot there with him growth-wise defensively, and then you kind of figure it out from offensive perspective. I think he has some skill development that needs to happen, but again, he's young. He's just a freshman. He's so young. He's going to be a piece down the road, and defensively, his frame, his physicality, you can already see all of that stuff would play right away.
Can I bring up one more guy that intrigues the heck out of me?
Let's see it.
He's probably a four. He's not a great rebounder, and I don't expect him to be a good defender. Ben Humrickas out of Evansville intrigues the heck out of me, man. Came from the D3 level, and the film we put together at Evansville, he's such a good shooter. Indiana, Illinois, many others expected to be in the mix. What do you think of Ben Humrickas?
Full disclosure, I need to do more research on him. I have not gotten a chance to dive into his full tape. I've done the 5-minute YouTube watch. Yeah. But I need to watch some full games with him, because there is something there. And that's what I'm talking about with like this portal. It's just like there's so many names that can slip under the gaps. And
it's the Marcus Dumas thing. It's like there's some skill in the operating out of ball screens and be able to booty ball. Like it really intrigues me with Underwood, Ben Humrickas.
Well, and then you just kind of look at just like what this roster could look like just from an age perspective in that front court. He would be just like the old dude in the room a little bit, right? Like you have, I don't think he, you get him and it changes how Merez Johnson feels about his status. I don't think it changes how Imani Hansberry feels about his status. And that's why I think like the Jake Davis addition early was really interesting, because it's like Jake Davis is a nice piece for them who I think is going to be a decent player down the road. But like Jake Davis is not going to be like irritated that Illinois is going after AJ Store and Otega Owe. He has no like it's, it just, you have to understand where you're at in the pecking order. And I think kind of mixing your roster with guys who are wannabe role players is really fascinating. It's why UConn was really good. And it's why Purdue was really good. And it's why NC State found it late when guys started being like, hey, I'll be fine being a role player. And like, that's why, that's what you kind of need to really win big.
So if Isaac Trotter were putting together this roster on Madden or something like that, you'd have, I'm guessing, Maddox, Small,
yes,
Owe,
yes,
and your big would be,
I would go with Kerry Booth at the four. Yeah, I really like him because I think there's a lot there, and you can kind of, I would like to see what Merez Johnson looks like next year, and I think if you could get him to play 22, 23 minutes a game, that'd be great.
How good would that team be next year?
Boy, I mean, you look at the Big Ten next year, it's like Purdue is going to have Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer. Wisconsin's, we'll see if they can hold on to Chucky Hepburn, but him and Max Klusman and Steven Crow. Nebraska, they get Bryce Williams back, who I think is going to be a stud next year. Ohio State, Michi Johnson and Bruce Thornton. But then you throw a Small, Maddox, you know, Owe with that core back. Like, you have a chance to be one of the tier one teams in the Big Ten. And that's the thing with that class is I don't think it's that hard to put together. I really don't. I think that that is a realistic class, that what this could potentially look like. Obviously, you need things to go your way, right? But if that's the class, you have that mix of high upside with a low, with a, some high floor guys too, that can really come in and you think be really impactful pieces that aren't going to be cancers in your program at all.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really, really good team. I would have them probably top three, top four in the Big Ten guaranteed, and depends just on the stay or go decisions there. And honestly, like from a straight up perspective, like I think Illinois has a great chance to head into next year with the most talented roster in the Big Ten again.
Mm. All right. So let me flip it here. Let's go a little higher risk here. If it were Boswell, Storr, I'll stay with Maddox and Booth. What would you think of that roster?
Oh man, that's a really good team. That's a really good team. I mean, all right, what's your starting lineup then? Boswell at the one, Maddox at the two, Storr at the three, Ty Rogers at the four, Merez at the five, or some combination of that. Like, young, high upside, really, really talented, because you go, like, you have a lot. Like, I'm
not, what intrigues me about Boswell is he could be there for a couple years, right? Like, and you know, Storr is probably gone after 1 year, but you never know. You know, and Booth could be there a couple. Like, that's what intrigues me, is you could have, you never know in the portal, we always got to use that, but like, you could have those guys potentially for another couple of years.
Well, and then I just think, I'm just trying to think like recruiting rankings too. Like, Boswell was a top 50 guy. Storr was, ended up as like a top 100 guy, I think. Booth was like, what was he out of the
60 something?
Yeah, like top 100 guy. Ty Rogers, top 50-ish guy. Merez Johnson, top 50. It, like, that's the talent accumulation there, where again, like, I think we also have to understand, like, next year is going to be different. Like, those transfer heavy teams, a lot of them really struggled this year. Like, teams with seven or more transfers this year, none of them were going to make the tournament this year from the high major ranks, until NC State randomly got hot and somehow ends up in the Final Four. Like, it's the craziest thing of all time. And Utah State was another outlier too, where you can build a transfer team and win. So like, you have to like temper your expectations for how it looks at times, but this is a talent grab, and you have to trust the talent, and you have to trust your ability. That a lot of other teams are going through this too. Like, there's a bunch of turnover at the top of the college basketball. Illinois is not the only one. Marquette's going to go through it. UConn's going to go through it. Purdue's going to lose Zach Edey. It's going to change. Arizona's going through it right now. Creighton's going through it right now. Like, there's change everywhere, and you just have to trust your evals and just trust the fact that, like, we're going to get this one right, because we've proven it in the past. We kind of know what we're looking for.
And the other part of that that I think is important is to retain a core group of guys that have been there. And that's why I think Luke Goody and Ty Rogers, and if it's Sincere Harris or Imani Hansberry or Dre Gibbs, like, to have those guys around who have been around, I think is still important, because it kind of just gives you that glue.
It does. And you think of, like, I think Ty Rogers is a guy who, again, we talk about Kylan Boswell as the person who kind of got a lot of the heat for everything Arizona went wrong. I think when Illinois didn't play well, it was, well, it's Ty Rogers' fault. And I just disagree with that. Like, I just
don't on my team. Like, I want Ty Rogers on my team. Does that force me to make some tough decisions at times of, can we get this guy? Can we play this guy? Like, Dane Danger, you couldn't really play with Ty Rogers, but I want Ty Rogers on my team.
And so did a lot of other coaches. And so you're going to find ways to – you kind of just want to have those guys that are, like, going to get better. And I know that Ty Rogers is going to get better. And I think you have, like, a defensive nucleus here in place where if you have Ty and if you get Sincere back, and even Luke to a certain extent, because I feel like you kind of know what you're getting from him defensively, that matters. And I think Merez is going to come in and be more ready on the defensive side of the basketball as well to be able to make an impact. Amani, you kind of trust what he can do on the defensive end as well, just with his talking and switchability and able to get his hands on loose balls. And so, like, you're kind of going in with, like, this defensive core, and then we'll figure out the offense later. Like, we've seen with Brad Underwood and to Tyler Underwood, they will tweak and adjust and find the right way to maximize their offensive personnel. And if you're don't have to necessarily, like, if you could have the bones of a really, really good defense already in place, I think that can make, you know, this process a little bit easier when you have so many new faces.
Well, Isaac, I almost took an hour of your time, but it was just too much fun, as we usually have on these things. Any final thoughts for Illinois fans? I mean, Brad Underwood's going to be able to get talent here.
Yeah, you're going to get talent. I think you have a really, really good sell compared to what other teams have in the portal. And again, I think that you have to just understand that this year is going to look different, and it's going to be different, and expectations should change. But your ceiling could still be there, even if the floor is a little bit higher. So it's just a very different offseason. Last year, I felt like the offseason was small swings and small misses. And Marcus Smax just ended up being a really, really big hit off of one of those small swings. This offseason, I think, is a lot more big swings with a chance for a little bit bigger of a downside of it. That's just normal. It's normal. It is what it is. And that's college basketball in this new era.
Isaac Trotter, you're the goods. Everyone check out his stuff, 247sports.com. You can follow him on Twitter as well. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
That was great. I knew he'd come through. I just texted him, said, hey, can you build a transfer class for me for Illinois and give me your thoughts on all these guys? He's like, done. Let me get some research done. And he came with it. Isaac's the goods, man. We are so proud of what he's become at 24/7 Sports. So when Illini Inquirer intern grows into what I think is one of the best college basketball voices, just the work Isaac puts into this, the amount of games he's watching, the amount of synergy he is pouring over, it is really cool to see. So he deserves all the success he has, and he's always a wealth of knowledge whenever we bring him on, so he's a great resource for us. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Give us a follow, rating, review wherever you get your podcast. We appreciate that. Check us out on YouTube. As always, hit that like button, hit the notifications bell, subscribe to us. We appreciate when you guys do that. We got plenty going on at Illini Inquirer. Derek Piper's been all over everything in the transfer portal, Illinois offseason. So if you're not a VIP member, now is the time to do it. Plus, I'm continuing to update our big board, all Illinois' transfer targets that we know they've been linked to, really have a lot of interest in. I'm continuing to update that as I pour through some of this film and add some analysis into that and go off of Derek's insight into the intel that he's getting. But we're also covering spring football, Illinois women's basketball's offseason moving on, and spring sports heating up. It's all at IlliniInquirer.com. Thanks, as always, for listening to the Illini Inquirer podcast. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. We'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not going to survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd. Only on Paramount Plus.